Hello, listeners. Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed the two-week break from Sourcecast and from me. I feel like I have spent this time wisely, recharging my batteries and finding interesting things to talk about here on Sourcecast. And that leads me to an interesting conversation point. Right now, you, the listener, think about how you found out about this podcast. I'm guessing you either heard about it directly from me, or you heard about it from a friend, and maybe randomly you picked it up from my Twitter feed, but I highly doubt it. And there is a reason why I bring this up. If you look up my name, Joey Lombardi, or if you look up Sourcecast on Google, it'll show up eventually, but it is not the top of the listings. And considering that I own the domain, joeylombardi.com, and I own the Twitter handle, at Joey Lombardi, and I even own Joey Lombardi on Facebook. And when you factor in that I've written hundreds of articles for other websites that link back to my sites, and I publish 3 articles a week on the source, you would assume that I would pop up first on Google, but I don't. At one point, I was the first thing that came up, but then I moved my website off of the Google Blogger platform, and I moved to my own domain and my own web-hosted site for more control and more powerful tools. And I kind of think the Google AI got pissed off at me when I did that, and they dropped me in the rankings. And even though this happened to me, a few weeks ago, I defended Google and maintain that Google is currently not a monopoly when it comes to search engines. But there's been a few articles this week that have uncovered some, let's say, underhanded behavior. And while I still maintain that Google is not a monopoly, they're not acting like an innocent organization. So this week, we're going to discuss, is Google evil? I'm Joey Lombardi, and this is Sourcecast Episode 85. Sorry, folks, before we get started, I just want to let you know that we will not be covering acquisitions this week because they have been rather Spartan. And the acquisitions that I haven't covered during my break, they're kind of old now. So read the blog post if you want to go back and find out what's been picked off over the last 2 weeks. And you can find that information at SN for supplier news, sn.joeylombardi.com. Shameless plug. So on to our main story. Is Google evil? Let's start with a news item that I covered several weeks ago on the Source blog. In July, The Guardian published an article covering a report from the Google Transparency Project that indicated Google was funding academics to write pro-Google reports and studies without disclosing that Google funded the reports. The Campaign for Accountability reported, and I quote, that Google-funded studies are published by a wide variety of sources and often blur the line between academic research and paid advocacy. Reports funded by the company have been authored by academics and economists hailing from some of the nation's leading law schools and universities, including Stanford, Harvard, and MIT, as well as some of the most prestigious universities in Europe, including Oxford, Edinburgh, and the Berlin School of Economics. The Google Transparency Report went on to say, and I quote, "Behind the scenes, Google has exercised an increasingly pernicious influence on academic research, paying millions of dollars each year to academics and scholars who produce papers that support its business and policy goals." An examination by the Google Transparency Project identified 330 research papers published between 2005 and 2017 on public policy matters of interest to Google that were in some way funded by the company. In 54% of those cases, academics were directly funded by Google. The remaining 46% worked for or were affiliated with groups or institutions that were funded by Google. In the majority of these cases, readers of the papers would not have been aware of the corporate funding. Academics did not disclose the Google funding in nearly 65% of the cases. The Google Transparency Project goes on to make another very interesting find, and I quote, "The number of Google-funded studies tended to spike during moments when its business model came under threat from regulators, or when the company had opportunities to push for regulations on its competitors." Google apparently began to fund a barrage of academic studies on antitrust issues in 2011, and this was a time when U.S. antitrust enforcers scrutinized the company's practices. 113 of the Google-funded studies in the Google Transparency Project's dataset focused on antitrust issues. The largest number of those studies were published in 2012, which coincided with major antitrust investigations conducted by the Federal Trade Commission and European regulators. Quick reminder, if you go back to the last few podcasts, we discuss Google's issues with the European Union and the fact that they recently declared a monopoly in Europe and were issued a $2.87 billion fine. And this recent ruling from Europe is where our story takes yet another turn. This past week, an academic openly praised the European Union's decision on Google's monopoly status, but there was a problem. Google was the primary donor or funding unit for the think tank that this gentleman worked at. The think tank, called New America Scholars, posted a statement after the European Union's announcement praising the penalty against Google. Google founder Eric Schmidt, who had been chairman of New America until 2016, communicated his displeasure to the group's president, Anne-Marie Slaughter. Barry Lynn is the author of that particularly egregious, air quote egregious, statement. And for the sake of everyone listening, let's review what the gentleman said. I should note before I start the quote that Barry Lynn worked for a subdivision under New America Scholars called the Open Markets Team. So just keep that in mind. And I quote, "The Open Markets Team congratulates European Commissioner Margaret Vestager and the European Competition Authority for this important decision. Google's market power is one of the most critical challenges for competition policymakers in the world today. By requiring that Google give equal treatment to rival services instead of privileging its own, Vestager is protecting the free flow of information and commerce upon which all democracies depend. We call upon U.S. enforcers, including the Federal Trade Commission, the Department of Justice, and states' attorneys general, to build upon this important precedent, both in respect to Google and to other dominant platform monopolists, including Amazon. The U.S. enforcers should apply the traditional American approach to network monopoly, which is to clearly separate ownership of the network from ownership of the products and services sold on that network, as they did in the original Microsoft case in the late 1990s. So that statement was initially published on New America's website. It then disappeared, it was taken down, and then it was put back up. As that drama was unfolding, there were several people within the organization that worried if the think tank could truly be independent if it had to worry about offending its donors. Apparently, those people were right to worry, because a couple of days after the article was published, Ms. Slaughter summoned Barry Lynn to her office and stated, and I quote, "The time has come for open markets and New America to part ways." And that was according to an email from Ms. Slaughter to Mr. Lynn. The email also seems to indicate that the entire open markets team, which is 10 full-time employees and some unpaid fellows, would be exiled from New America. So how much money was Eric Schmidt giving to New America? Well, since 1999, the New America Foundation has received more than $21 million from Google and Eric Schmidt's family's foundation. It's interesting to note that Ms. Slaughter asserted in the same email, which apparently was provided to the New York Times, that the decision, and I quote, was in no way based on the content of Barry's work. But she also accused Mr. Lynn of imperiling the institution as a whole.
Say what?
How can she say that he didn't get fired because of the article when she accused the article of imperiling the entire organization? That's just shenanigans. And if you're thinking, well, maybe this was just a one-time thing, it's an isolated incident, a blogger on Gizmodo also had a similar experience when Google introduced their Google Plus social network in 2011. Kashmir Hill happened to work for Forbes at the time of Google's social media push, and the Google salespeople tried to get Forbes to push the Google Plus button to share on social media, like you see the Facebook and Twitter buttons. But the abnormality was, Google was claiming that if they didn't use the Google Plus buttons, Forbes articles would be lowered down on their search rankings. And I can actually corroborate this. Much later, when I wrote for BabyCenter, there was a push to use Google Plus for that exact same reason. Google never denies that that was a fact, that if you didn't use that Google Plus, your search rankings would be hurt. Kashmir Hill went on to write a story for Forbes about this exact situation, and Google immediately had Forbes squash the article on the Forbes site. They claimed that the entire sales conversation was under NDA, but Kashmir Hill stated no NDA was ever presented or signed by her. And then there was this whole weird situation where the cached version of the article disappeared from Google, but Google claims that was absolutely done by Forbes and they had nothing to do with it. So now I have painted this sordid story of Google using their technology to influence academics, policymakers, business leaders to suit their own interests. Does that make them evil? Does that make them smart business people? Perhaps a little bit of both. I think it's somewhat disingenuous for a company that is trying to promote access to information to squelch it. So I don't really have an issue with the influencing per se. but the squelching. And I don't really want to make this connection, but that dude who got fired because of the diversity issues a couple of weeks ago, because he's saying that Google is sort of an echo chamber of the same thought. Here is a Google-funded organization that dissented with that Google thought, and a guy got fired. I am not trying to get that diversity guy off the hook, but there is a sort of a weird parallel there that I'm uncomfortable with. As I said before, I defended Google with the monopoly situation. I don't believe that Google is operating as a monopoly. However, when they do things like this, when they try to suppress information and opinions that they are, in fact, a monopoly, they're sort of acting guilty. That's not good. But honestly, that's what any large business that's trying to protect their interests is going to do. Doesn't make it right, but doesn't make it illegal either. Let's take it back to the opening, when I mentioned my own personal website rankings went down when I got off of Google product. Here's the thing. I thought that I had too many Google products in all aspects of my life, between the instant messenger and the phones and the Gmail and the blog. I'm like, I'm way too Google. So I spun up my own server, got my own hosting, went with something that was totally independent. I could easily do that because I had choice. I went away from Google and found a superior product. And you're all enjoying that product right now. Do I wish that I was higher on Google's rankings? Yes. Have I done extensive research on how to try to make my rankings better? Yes. Has it worked? No. But I'm going to keep trying, and I'm number one on Bing. I love you, Microsoft.
And that's all we have for this week. You can find Sourcecast on iTunes, Google Music, and all of your favorite podcasting applications. Sourcecast is recorded in bucolic Mandarin, New Jersey, and it's produced by my dad. The outro is performed by me, Ben Lombardi, and music is provided by Patrick Lee. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.